Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world. It's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Is gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy. Woo! IU. America. They got a football team now.
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here, Jim Coyle.
Tuesday. Hope everybody is doing well. Jim Coyle coming with you from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Coach Griff alongside as well. Hope your week is going well as we've gotten past Monday. So it's all downhill from here, baby. I usually say that on Wednesdays. So
that's all right. Day early.
Plenty to talk about. Mike DeCourcy will join us from the Fox and Big Ten networks, along with Dustin DePirik from the Indy Star, as the Pacers heading towards their season opening later on this fall in October. But all the chatter right now is about DAZN. We'll talk about that with Dustin as the new area, the new viewing platform that the Pacers will be on. Some fans not happy about that, and I understand that. So that LSU adds the NFL player that was actually cut from a roster back to their team. So that's another new one. But, of course, it's the SEC doing this type of stuff. Every time, it seems like it's always an SEC school. Now, on one side, you could say, hey, that means they're progressive. They're looking for an advantage because they're getting their ass kicked. That's the thing. But, yeah, we'll talk about more about that later on.
The crazy thing about that, you know, Jim, just not to interrupt you there real quick, but the SEC presidents yesterday put out a statement about this specific issue and how it was against the academic reasonings to do something of this nature. But they never said that they would not participate in bringing those type of individuals back. They condemned it, but that was a soft, nothing statement, because they didn't say that they weren't going to actively participate in it if it was a player come to an institution. So it was funny that they put out this statement, and with less than 6 to 8 hours later, this transaction seems to be going down with LSU, with this player coming back from the NFL. And yeah, it's crazy, but LSU, I guess, will have to cut players from their roster to make room for these guys that are coming in, supposedly. So
when you say players, how many are there?
Well, there's this one, and I think there's either at least one other perhaps that is also a possibility. And I think I'd have to look. I can't remember this kid. I thought this kid was more of a lineman that came out, but I thought there was a tight end as well. But regardless in that respect, it was, I was just turned off by the statement from the presidents of the SEC that made this release.
I don't
through
pay
the
attention
SEC
to anything those clowns have to say anyway. I mean, it's all mutton chop. It doesn't matter.
Well, you can say LSU's buying a championship, because that's what everybody accused Indiana last year of. So there you go. But anyway, sorry to interrupt there. I just thought it was relevant discussion.
So it's not against the rules. It's not
exactly
against the rules.
And this is the one that this is really the one the NCAA should really be focusing on and going for a stay in the courts, as opposed to the 5-for-5 issue with the class of 22 players, because those individuals did not go out and sign contracts. They did not do what these other kids have done. And that is more pressing of an issue than what Stephen Daly and Wyatt are involved with. So I just, the NCAA there wants
all hired an agent.
Say that again.
Haven't they all hired an agent?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's a disagreement on the agents that they have. It's to the agents that have engaged with NFL teams. My point
being, that's already against the rules.
Oh, you mean as far as putting them in the eligible? I'm sorry. You're talking about negotiating with an NFL team type of agent. I got what you're saying there. Yeah, I don't know. With Daly and Wyatt, they both were injured, so I don't think they were going to get an opportunity until 27. So I don't think they necessarily did. So that would be one question that we'd have to have confirmation on. But anyway.
I need an attorney next to me every day, all day, to discern what the hell is and is not, which, what, there and the other.
Our best bet is
just...
You're great. Chat GPT. Yeah, put it into Chat GPT and let him be our lawyer.
I don't know that Chat GPT could keep up with it all, but 49ers owner arrested in Ohio mobile home park suspected of engaging in prostitution. Now, I don't have a problem with people doing things, you know, whatever. What I have a problem with is absolute utter stupidity. And this falls in the line of what's the Patriots owner?
Kraft. Yeah, Kraft doing in the Miami thing. Yes, during the Super Bowl. It's
stupidity, because all of this. There are so many ways today in today's society where something of this nature could be accomplished completely unknown. Hell, they wouldn't even know who the hell you are. And yet people with tons of money, no less, continue to do these idiotic things to where they are put in the spotlight and whatnot. And I'm like, you're an idiot. I don't have a problem with people doing, I said, hey man, that's, you know, whatevs. But you're an idiot. You're begging to be caught. You're begging for this to happen.
Yeah.
So that's, it's just dumb. And then on top of it, why are you in, and I don't, it's, that sounds judgmental, so I won't say that, but it's just stupidity.
Well, the fact
you can fly under the radar in so many ways, and they're doing every way not to do that.
Yeah. Why are you in Ohio? Out in the middle of a, you know, nowhere mobile home park as a 49ers owner. It just doesn't make sense either. I mean, there's some things there that just don't add up in the full story of it. And I don't know if you heard this up here in Fort Wayne yesterday, a big scandal has been released at Northside High School, where they fired the principal and the head football coach yesterday without explanation. And there's rampant rumor and speculation that the principal may have done something.
Oh, never mind. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say Tim brought it up, but I was going to bring it up later. See, this was the thing with Northside releasing the principal and head football coach immediately. And then Jalen Smith, who everybody kind of understood and knew, Notre Dame, played with the Cowboys for a little bit, will be the interim head coach there now as he was there coaching. But the speculation that this is a pretty involved situation that may involve, I say this with the standpoint of this being purely speculation, that it may involve grade changing for players to be eligible. But that is purely speculation and rumor, but it was really odd that they fired the principal and the head football coach on a Monday, second week of school. So something had to occur.
It's not odd if they have good reason.
Yes, exactly. Right.
Like that they probably do. And usually when you go to that length of doing something, there's fire in this situation most of the time. Not to say that that's always the case, but
anyway, it's significant.
Yeah. getting back to Jed York, the owner of the 49ers, he's a native of East Palestine, Ohio, which is where this happened. But his charges included, and we'll get back to the Fort Wayne thing.
Yeah, that's fine. Go ahead. I just wanted to bring it up quickly because it was.
But the charges were misdemeanor, disorderly conduct, and possession of criminal tools.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Whatever the hell that is.
Yeah, it doesn't add up.
It's just crazy. But getting back to the Fort Wayne High School situation thing, obviously there's something there, or they wouldn't have been able to go for that, but or pull that off. It's a shame for their players that the season has started, and this is going to shake this team. It'll be very difficult for them not to be affected mentally by this happening, and boom, that's going to be all the chatter, the talk. That's all everyone's going to be talking about. So we'll see how they're able to respond, but hopefully they can keep it together, and maybe they'll do just that. So good luck to them. Looking forward to seeing if they can pull that off. And of course, I know you'll be following that up there as well. But
yeah,
plenty of other things going on. What's that?
I said we've got their game in a couple weeks here coming up, and putting Jalen Smith in charge was definitely the right move because, like you just said, Jim, he'll be a calming voice, you know, a guy that is looked up to in this area very highly and highly respected as well.
Other headlines, so to speak, Clint Kubiak, Raiders head coach, has not named a starter for week one. I'm going to be shocked if it's Fernando. I'm going to be honest with you. I think that he's just doing this just to keep a little interest in the game, keep a little, you know, a little something going on. But we'll talk more about that later on today as well. Fernando discusses his tough lessons he learned during that tough preseason game versus the Texans. Threw a pick six. Only one he threw it in the end was that last year against Oregon up there with that ball, just wounded duck, just up in the air begging to be picked off. But plenty more. We'll hear from Kurt Cignetti and a few of the players as well today. Appreciate you being with us. We're back with more, including Mike DeCourcy, right after these messages.
Andy Moore Honda Bloomington has the deals for you, like great savings on the remaining 2025 Hondas. First-time buyers get more than expected. The Honda Civic and HRV are the most popular vehicles for first-time buyers in the U.S. Andy Moore Honda Bloomington also has a quality selection of pre-certified used vehicles. And check out the selection of Andy Moore Honda Bloomington's 2026 models, like the Honda Passport, Honda CR-V Hybrid, Honda Ridgeline, and more. ISB Radio. Andy Moore Honda. Any more, huh?
Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Tuesday, and joined now by the great Mike DeCourcy. I've got all kinds of your titles have actually grown longer now, even though you're retired, because now it's senior sports writer emeritus from the Sporting News and with Fox and Big Ten Networks, Mike DeCourcy. So your retiring has made that longer.
Sorry about that. Hey, I got a funny one though. I was listening before I came on, and Coach Chris says, "What would he be doing in East Palestine, Ohio?" And so I'm like, "Well, I know the DeBartolo family has strong roots in the Youngstown area. So how close to East Palestine is Youngstown?" And then I looked up and it said, "It's in Columbiana County," and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I was there on Saturday. We have this craft festival in this town. It's called the Shaker Woods Festival. It's in a town called Columbiana in Ohio. And it's like an hour from us, and my wife wanted to go. So I was really close that trailer park. I probably drove right by."
That's crazy, man. Just craziness. There's always, that's the great thing about sports. There's always something crazy and that has nothing to damn do with sports.
It's true.
So that's the great part of it. So continue to make that fun. But what's the latest with you? What do you do now since you're, I mean, obviously you're not writing as much as you were or nearly. So do you get to relax a little more right now as we're barreling in towards football season, because you tend to lean more towards basketball with some certain, differences, obviously.
Yeah, I've done a lot of relaxing, I guess you could say. I was offered at two colleges here in town the chance to teach sports writing after my retirement became known. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that much work that quickly. Maybe in the future I'd like to teach some if they're still interested.
That's where J.D. Campbell is today, by the way.
Okay.
He is teaching a class, so he's not going to be with us for a few weeks. And it's actually the old Bob Knight coaching class.
Oh, wow.
What this is. So, but that's why JD's not with us today, because you needed somebody to teach a class, and voila, there you go. It's easy money, man.
If I was offered the chance to teach Bob Knight's coaching class, and all I had to do is go in and yell at everybody. No, I'm just kidding.
Throw a chair around.
that would be interesting. I would love to sit in on JD's class. That's awesome. But when I was offered that opportunity, I said, oh, I really appreciate it. I was honored and all that. But I want to have a football season where I'm getting ready for hoops, which will still be quite busy. I still have Fox and BTN, and I'll be doing some writing for Fox for sure. I think for some others, Seth Davis has talked to me about writing for his site, Hoops HQ. So I'm sure I'll be doing some. But so I wanted a fall where I could just relax and sweat the Steelers, maybe something like that.
Well, I'm sure they'll give you an opportunity to do that. But not as much as an opportunity as the Cleveland Browns as getting booed for naming their quarterback. Who they owe billions and billions of dollars, it seems. How can an organization be so ineptly run as the Browns seem to have been? They've had 416 different quarterbacks over the last 10 years, and it's just a constant churning of a mess, it seems.
You know, I'll say this, Jim. I don't guess that I was alone in this. But at the time the trade was either being proposed or completed, whatever 23 or 22, whatever year that was, I blew that. I absolutely obliterated that trade. I knew it was going to be a disaster because you were starting from a position in that contract. You were starting from a position where the player you're signing is probably going to lose most, if not all, of the coming season. I think he wound up losing 11 games in a suspension. That was no secret. They paid him $200+ million when they knew he was going to be suspended for the majority of the impending season. Like I said, it could have been 22. It could have been 23. I don't have the timeline quite right. But after that, then he
could have been fat man, could have been little boy. We'll have to discern that later.
He gets injured a couple of times. He's ineffective when he does come back that year.
He's the cancer of the locker room.
Yeah, it's the most predictable disaster in probably pro sports history. So, like I said, I doubt that I'm the only one that wrote that, but. No. I definitely have the receipts. I mean, it was clearly going to be a mess.
I remember thinking that wherever he landed, it was going to be a mess because he was also going through all of the sexual misconduct allegations at the time that were had become more than allegations with a ton of women coming out. So there's just no way you're going to win in that situation. So if you've been as bad as the Browns have been, why put yourself in that situation?
Right. Look, I don't think that any if I were a team, I wouldn't have touched him no matter what because of what led to the suspension, let's say. But if you were going to do that, if you were going to say, OK, I'll ignore that and we'll move forward. But you don't trade a bunch of assets, which they did, and you don't give an exorbitant contract, which they did. You take him as a guy who got cut. and you put him on your roster and then you make him work to get the job instead of basically anointing him as your future. I mean, they traded multiple picks for that. I don't know. Again, it's been several years, so I don't remember the exact price they paid. But there were multiple high-end picks that they paid for him and his contract, which now is not exorbitant based on today's rates. If he were able to be a capable starting quarterback. But at the time, the cap was lower, so it was a big chunk of your cap at that point. It was just a disaster. And look, one of the things that I've had arguments with certain baseball people over the last several weeks, basically since the All-Star break, when I wrote a column about the need for a salary cap, and they say, "Well, look, the Mets spent all this money and they don't have anything." I'm like, "No, you don't understand. It's not about whether if you spend a bunch of money, you're going to automatically do the right things. Lots of people spend money stupidly. What you need is the guarantee that if you have a team, that you have the same chance as the Dodgers and the Mets or the Yankees or Braves or whoever. That's the point. That's what's wrong in Major League Baseball. But the NFL, everybody's got the same chance. The Jets are a mess annually because they don't know what they're doing. The Chiefs are annually in the hunt because they were smart enough to hire Andy Reid, and the executives there were smart enough to draft Pat Mahomes 10th and all that. But the point is, no, you can't guarantee that people who are running an organization are going to do it right, or basically everybody would be 500. Somebody's going to be smart and somebody's going to be dumb. And the Browns ownership has been a disaster. And what's really odd about that is that the same group owns the Columbus Crew of Major League Soccer, and they've won two championships and I think five trophies since 2020. So like the same, obviously they're hiring different people, but it's the same ownership group and they hired smart soccer people and not smart football people. It's really weird.
I fit into that first group. Was that the not smart group? Mike DeCourcy from Fox and Big Ten Networks with us right now. And now we've got the SEC is a leader in college football in all things of the anomalies. LSU and Lane Kiffin now bringing in an NFL player that was cut. So now we've got a new discussion, which I don't think it's going to matter because just throw that into the box of all this other stuff, which is pretty much the same. But of course, it's an SEC team that is ahead of the game here on getting that accomplished. I don't know if anyone's going to follow that, but Griff pointed out earlier that several SEC presidents, spoke out against it, but it's just lip service, I think.
Well, it's odd that they would speak. Look, I don't really think if you've been in an NFL camp and you never played in a real game that you're an NFL player. I think that is a hyperbolic way of putting it in the headline. Oh, look, he's an NFL player. Well, he was like the 90th guy. It takes 53 to make a team, and then I think how many, like a dozen or so on a practice squad. So yeah, if you're 63. If you're not one of the 32 times 65 best football players, you're not really an NFL player. It doesn't bother me that player who's not good enough might come back to college. I would just like it to be that he actually didn't play 4 years, and I'm not sure that's the case with this guy. I think it's more a matter of that whole 50-year nonsense that the NCAA created for itself by announcing that rule in June. I think that they wanted to have this mess because they thought it would prompt Congress to act. Oh, look what a mess it is. It's terrible. Look at all these people suing us. We need your help. All you do is you wait till October and you say, okay, we're doing 5-5. You know, I don't favor that anyway, but if you're going to do it, you don't do it in June when you know that that's going to allow a bunch of basketball players and probably some football players like this young man who don't cut it in the NFL to try to come back. Okay, there we go. It's 53 plus 16 practice squad. So if you're not one of the 69 best players times 32, you're not an NFL player. Let's be honest about that. He tried. He didn't make it. He may never make it. He can go and have beers and say, hey, I was in that NFL camp, but he can't ever say he was an NFL player.
Had a cup of coffee. I got a jersey with my name on it.
There you go. Believe me, I would get out of that locker room with the jersey for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Right. One of my questions, Mike, is Mike DeCourcy with us. I'm sure that they've hired an agent at this point. And does it that also go into the eligibility clause?
Well, but now, I mean, all the college Nothing athletes matters. Have agents too. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, but those are usually NIL agents.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just, you know, again, there's no real division there for me. I draw the line, and it seems like the courts have drawn the line. If you played an NFL or NBA game, they're not taking you back. But if you didn't, they very seriously will consider it.
But if you bet on it, it's okay.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Come on now. He's not playing this year.
But that was not because of his team. And the NCAA lost that. So, but y'all, I'm dragging us down an alleyway there that I don't want to go down. But yeah, it's one of these days we won't have to. It's not that we won't have to worry about it anymore. It'll be commonplace. We'll know what's what. That's the thing, is we're in this phase of we don't know what's what. We don't know what judge is going to rule this today, and then another judge rules that tomorrow, as we're in that situation right now with the players that were granted this fifth year and then made ineligible for this fifth year. So there's a lot of players, teams, that are in a little bit of limbo right now, not the teams per se, but, you know, Indiana is a perfect example. Two of their players are very high-profile players, and I'd say most of these players are going to be high-profile, or you wouldn't be messing with them. So it's just that's a weird situation to be in with games just a couple of weeks away.
Oh, no doubt, and that's the risk that lots of teams took. I'm sure it's frustrating for, especially in basketball, you saw a lot of players compete in college basketball last year after having played in European clubs and even at advanced ages. Milo Petrovic, for example, at Illinois, he didn't play a bunch, obviously, by the end of the year because Keaton Wagler became so great that Petrovic couldn't get his job back. He was on the team at 23, having played in European clubs. And so a lot of teams thought that that was a window of opportunity and went out and signed such players. And they're getting much more resistance now from the NCAA in terms of the approval of eligibility. We saw, I think BYU lost, if I remember correctly, BYU lost a player yesterday. I might have the wrong. There was a high-profile European player. European club player that left that was ruled ineligible and won't be able to play this season. I might be wrong about BYU, there was one yesterday. So a lot of teams are in that situation. And for the college football teams, it's much, much more pressing in the sense that they have games coming up. But for a college basketball team, it's more consequential because you basically have 10 rotation spots and you're losing 10% of your rotation if a player like that gets ruled ineligible. So it's tricky, but every team has to know going into this what the parameters are. And for the basketball teams in particular with the European club players, they had no reason to believe that those players wouldn't be eligible this year if they were eligible a year ago. And yet we are where we are. It's really been made a mess. And I think Charlie Baker was hired in, again, 22 or 23. And I think that the play then should have been to try to figure out the colossal, I don't want to use the word mess, but the colossal job it would be, the intricate job it would be to try to figure out how do we bargain with these athletes? Because it's the only way that this is going away completely. There's never any lawsuits at all in regards to NBA or NFL eligibility and such. They just play because they have a collective bargaining agreement, and this is what the parameters are. This is what you can make. This is what you have to do to be eligible, et cetera. And so, like, if somebody gets in trouble, like Deshaun Watson, the NFL has the power to punish him. And they did. And in college, we don't know who's eligible, who can play, who can't play. This is all of the college's creation. This is not the NCAA that caused this. This is the colleges in how they've operated the NCAA.
Mike DeCourcy from Fox and Big Ten with us right now. Coach Griff alongside as well. We've got more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Back with all that and more right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Tuesday. Glad to be here with you. Glad to have you along. Coach Griff along with us as well. Mike DeCourcy from Fox and Big Ten Network. So how's the basketball season going for you right now? This has got to be a lot easier to roll into the season with some of the things that have been taken off your shoulders now. Does this give you opportunities to look at things wider, with a wider scope, differently? What's up with the DeCourcy view?
Well, I'd say, first of all, it's been I've been somewhat pleased that I haven't had to cope with all this nonsense with the various lawsuits and all that. I haven't had to cover any of that because it's really a mess. Oh, by the way, I discovered that I had the right state, wrong program. It was Utah that lost a player named Noam Yakov, who they were counting on, but was ruled ineligible by the NCAA. And that's part of what I'm talking about, the 5-on-5 rule that that players now are trying to take advantage of by going to court over the fact that it was it is kind of silly when you think about it. Everybody who played in the 2020-21 season got an extra year because the 2021 season was kind of a mess in both sports. It was really both in football and men's basketball. It was really a mess. They did the best they could. Don't get me wrong. And it was good that they played in both sports, but it wasn't what any of those players signed up for. So they gave them another year. And now, for reasons that I don't agree with, they are giving everybody an extra year from now on, a fifth year. But the players who entered school in 2022 didn't get that year I talked about, the COVID year, we call it, and they won't get this extra year. And that's why we have all these lawsuits. And it just, it makes no sense to announce that rule in June when you open the door for all these lawsuits, unless that's what you wanted. And so being able to not cover that, Jim, is one of the great pleasures of my retirement, because it's just a disaster, and it's not good for college sports. It does make it look like no one's in charge, and it does make the NCAA look to a lot of people like they don't know what they're doing. And in fact, I always try to push back against that because I know a lot of the people at the NCAA, and I have tremendous respect for them. They are good at their jobs. But they are not dictators. They do not just stamp rules and say, you follow these. They are doing what the membership wants them to do. And yeah, someone like Charlie Baker provides guidance and maybe could provide different guidance than he has, or maybe better guidance than he has. And he hasn't been as available, I don't think. I can't tell you how many times that I've been in his company. I guess it's got to be 3 or 4 times that he'll stop and do at the Final Four and do media. And then there's this one of his assistants or whatever after like the third question is trying to get him out of there. And it's like, you know, the guy almost never talks to us. Just let him talk. So he doesn't make himself as available as he should, I don't think. But I don't think that's the NCAA's biggest issue. I think the biggest issue is that they're trying to find every way around all these eligibility rules short of bargaining. They went in front of Congress and said, we have to have a salary cap. It's like, well, okay, go negotiate one like MLB or MLB should, NFL has, NHL has, and NBA has. If you want a salary cap, negotiate it. You just don't impose it.
The great Mike DeCourcy with us from Big Ten Fox Networks. Isn't this what got the NCAA into trouble to begin with? Just refusing to do the thing that ultimately was going to happen, but you do everything in between to not do it, to further bury yourself under a pile and pile and pile of rubble.
I've told this story a few times, and maybe on our show, I'm not sure, but when the Alston case was decided in 2021, I think it was, I called Sonny Vaccaro, who I've known for 45, 50 years. And Sonny,
hey, size 11 and a half.
There you go. And Sonny was one of the people who helped organize the O'Bannon case. And so he told me, you got to call the attorney on the O'Bannon case and hear what we went through. So he gives me the attorney's number, and I called the gentleman who had been the lead attorney on the O'Bannon case that went to court in 2014. And the attorney told me that after it was clear that they were through every hurdle to get a case into court, and it was going to trial, I believe it was in California, Judge Wilkin, they were going to trial. The plaintiff's attorneys didn't want to go to trial because it costs money to try a case and takes that much longer and all that. So they wanted to settle. They wanted to go to the NCAA and say, here's what we think would be fair in a settlement. And do I know, I don't know whether it would have been fair or not. I think it would have been better than ended up losing the O'Bannon case and all of that. But the NCAA doesn't know whether the settlement offer would have been fair either, because Jim and Coach, the NCAA refused to take the meeting. They didn't even want to hear from the plaintiff's attorneys what sort of propositions they had in order to settle that case. That's unbelievable. And then the Alston case. Now, the Alston case was the one that they ended up losing at the Supreme Court 9-0. And honestly, 9-0 wasn't a big enough victory because it was so ridiculous that the NCAA would try to stand their ground in that case, because the Alston case was about educational expenses. Like my nephew went to Wake Forest in 2006 or so. And at that point, and this may be true now, I don't know if it is now, but in 2006, if you went to Wake Forest and you were a freshman, well, you paid your money and then they gave you class, but they also gave you your own personal laptop computer. Like, they wanted every single student at Wake Forest to be on a laptop, the same laptop, because it helped them. And so they were willing to pay for that. Okay, so if you were a Wake Forest basketball player, you got that. But if you went to another college that was an NCAA member and they didn't have computers for every student, the basketball team could maybe do it for you. But that's what the NCAA didn't want to allow. Like, if you happen to be a basketball star and you weren't coming from a super wealthy household, maybe it'd be helpful if your basketball team could give you a computer so you could go to class and you could look stuff up and all the rest of that. But you weren't allowed, and the NCAA didn't want to allow you. If you had a great business school, say the MBA at your school was prestigious or whatever, and so maybe that would give you an edge in recruiting. Hey, come to our school, play hoop for us, and if you graduate and you graduate above a 2.5 or whatever, you can get it. You know, we'll give you a scholarship to go to get an MBA here. Couldn't do that either. The NCAA fought against that. They are an educational institution. That's why they are allowed to not pay any tax on all the money they generate. They are a nonprofit educational institution, and yet they didn't want you to be able to get a free computer from your football program or basketball program. It's ridiculous. So they deserve to lose 9-0. That was under the Mark Emmert leadership. And mm-hmm. I like to think that Charlie Baker wouldn't do things that were that dumb. but he also isn't pushing hard enough in the direction of what would be smart and forward thinking. I know collective bargaining is not an easy thing for the NCAA membership. There are so many different rules and constituents and states, and this is public and this is private and all the rest. I know it's not easy. That's why it's going to take a long time to figure out. And we've wasted 5 years trying to get Congress to fix it. And even if they pass this bill, the Save College Sports Act or whatever they're calling it, even if they pass it, it's not going to change anything. It's not going to fix anything. They'll end up getting sued a bunch of times over that. Not every law that gets passed by Congress, everybody says, okay, we're good. Sometimes the rules and laws they pass wind up in court and end up failing anyway.
And all it takes is one judge to make a decision.
Yeah.
Throw that monkey wrench into the soup. Shout out to Robert the Truth Carter. He's down in Evansville listening a long time. Loyal listener. Appreciate you, Robert.
You know, I was going to ask, because this kind of goes hand in hand. We had Jason Stahl on yesterday from College Football Players Association. And he was talking about this very subject matter about the collective bargaining piece and things like that. He said the best conference that has it laid out to kind of move in that direction is actually the Big Ten, and what Tony Petitti has done in structuring things for that to actually go through and happen is a easy aspect of governance in that respect. But what I found interesting is that the Big Ten pays all the players. Their checks actually come from the Big Ten and not the individual schools. So they're all 1099s that way, independent contractors. But he said doing that enables that to happen, where a collective bargaining agreement would involve the players and the conference, not the individual schools, is what his thought process was. Now, the only problem is the Big Ten doesn't take out their taxes. So all these kids are getting 1099s at the end of the year. And if they're not under an LLC and paying estimated taxes, they're going to get a 30% tax bill on their money. That's the only problem. But again, I think that goes hand in hand with it. What is your thoughts to that dynamic of structure, where it's more with a conference as opposed to all the individual schools? Because that would be like 18 different type of schools. And what you said there, what a private school does, what a public school does, there's so many different things there. I think it makes sense the way that Petitti has set it up with the Big Ten. And I don't think any other conferences have that.
Yeah, I think that's a great structure. I really do. I think, and it does clear a lot of the hurdles of, you know, well, this is a private institution, that's a public institution. I've always thought that that's not that hard to get around, Coach. When you look at the University of Florida Athletic Association, has been in existence way in advance of any of this stuff. It was somewhat of a separate entity for years. I couldn't tell you when it was started, but I mean, it was during my time covering college athletics. It was like that for a long time. A lot of athletic departments don't go as far in terms of the name and the structure as Florida does, but operate independently of their institutions. When I covered Penn State, and Jim Tarman was the athletic director, so this is all the way back in the 80s. They were very much...
How far back is that? Because I don't know that name.
Yeah, Jim was the AD in the 80s. He started out in media relations probably in the 60s, and then rose to AD by the time I was covering the team, and I covered them from 84 to 92. And Jim and I sat down over breakfast one day, and he explained to me how Penn State athletics operated to an extent. And they were, while they were part of the institution, they were a individual entity, that they operated as part of the university, but not as, let's say, they were their own body. And so they had contracts with the university. They paid, for instance, they're one of the schools, and I think a lot of schools are like this, probably a majority, where they write a tuition check for and room and board for every athlete from the athletic department to the university. And so if you separate them out like that, I mean, they're still part of the university to an extent. I mean, you're not independent totally, but you don't necessarily have to operate under the exact same rules as the university does. And so I think that that's an, and because like if you're Florida Athletics and you are a member of the SEC, you are voluntarily a member of the SEC. I think that voluntary organization. So if you abide by their rules in the case of the SEC, or as you mentioned, as apparently is in place in the Big Ten, you are a voluntary member of the Big Ten. No one's forcing you to be that. The university athletics doesn't have to be part of the Big Ten. They choose to be. And you as an athlete can, you know, if you are going to compete at the University of Illinois or the University of Maryland or UCLA or whatever, you are voluntarily competing in the Big Ten. So I think that helps clear a lot of the hurdles that might exist toward some sort of collective bargaining agreement. And I really think that that is the way to get past all this. I'm not an attorney, but I've had attorneys tell me both sides of this. It's possible, it's impossible. So as the case for both things legal, the answer lies somewhere in between.
Yeah. Well, Kentucky did that last year where they separated themselves from the University of Kentucky and their own entity. So I think that's one answer to the question. So I thanks for that answer. I just thought it was a fascinating discussion yesterday that I wanted to get your feedback on.
No, I'm glad
what's
you did.
What's up next for you? Oh, go ahead, Mike.
No, I that was all. Sorry.
I was going to say, what's up next for you now in this little bit more relaxing environment that you have?
It's a great question. I'm taking my wife shopping this morning. That's what's up next for me.
Well, nice honey-do list there, baby. That'll happy wife, happy life. So
absolutely.
There you go. Hey, always a pleasure, buddy. Look forward to it next week as well as we get closer to the start of the college football season, man. Well, just a couple weeks away.
I think that, isn't that not week zero? Am I wrong
about
that?
Yeah, it's Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah, we're ready to go.
No calories. Calorie free, baby. Calorie free.
Free food has no calories, and college football has no calories.
That's right.
Exactly. From the Big Ten and Fox Networks, the great Mike DeCourcy. Appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks, guys.
You betcha. And we've got plenty more coming up. Dustin Dupirik's going to join us. We'll talk a little bit about the Pacers and their decision to go with the zone. That's got people kind of pissed off, not happy about that switchover. And we'll hear from Coach Kurt Cignetti and a few of the Hoosier football players as we get closer and closer to the start of the season, man. It's everybody's been counting it down, and it's almost here. The week zero is a nice little appetizer, I guess. But the entree comes the week after.
Well, think of this. Today, the Hoosiers will be scrimmaging their final time to set their depth charts, because come Thursday, their attention goes right to North Texas as we're in school and they're in a school routine. So they're practicing in the afternoon. So they'll scrimmage, take the day off on Wednesday, and then full speed ahead with North Texas on Thursday. So camp is essentially over after today's scrimmage.
And then will we hear Coach Cignetti name number two quarterback in the clip that we have of him?
Yes. He does discuss that.
Okay, we'll hear. Perfect. We'll have that in along with Coach Cignetti when he speaks later. We'll hear from some of the IU players as well. And as I said, the great, the incomparable Dustin Dupirik joins us. We'll talk a little bit about the Pacers and keep you informed on everything that's going on. Much more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Coach Griff and myself, Jim Coyle. Back after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this beautiful, beautiful Tuesday. Man, we've got the great fall weather right now. Coach yeah. Griff with me, as always, at the helm, keeping us going in the right direction and away from hitting the icebergs. So that would be a good. Fred asks, is J.D. Campbell's class a pass or fail class? I would not know that. I do not have the answer to that. We'll have to wait till the great JD returns to answer that.
He was fired up. I talked to him last night. He was
he's always fired up.
He's fired up for this class, and he was telling me a little bit of the history, but he said he'd fill me in later, but he was raring to go. So,
well, it started as Bob Knight's coaching class, and then I don't know what all it has become since then. Kit Klingelhofer, the former SID for IU, had a class. I took that class, as a matter of fact, when I was in school. Kit's class. But, yeah, it's always something going on that you don't know about. Yeah. Speaking of Kurt Cignetti, let's hear about well, what do we have first here?
Well, we've got Coach Cignetti, his typical Monday presser that he has done. Now, they didn't practice yesterday. I think yesterday for them was a day off, if I'm not mistaken, because of classes and stuff. But he was just giving an update on, you know, different subject areas that of importance. So it
including who will be the number two quarterback, the guy behind Mr. Josh Hoover. There was not been a lot of, we kind of knew all along, but made it official. He doesn't make a lot of things official. I'm kind of surprised he did that, as a matter of fact. He didn't just say, well, we need a second quarterback. You'll see.
Yeah, I think in his roundabout way, he says it. You know, he's been the predominant one taking the two reps of late, so forth and so on. And right now he is our two. But he didn't, you know, push aside Cherry and others that have competed well. There's just not enough reps. I mean, that's the problem at quarterback. There's only so many reps, and you usually default to the guys that have been there and experienced it over the years because they have more reps and are more in tune with things that are going on. And with Wilson, he's also had some playing time. So that kind of trumps a lot of things. But anyway, it's a predominantly, like I said, about a 9-10 minute presser from yesterday with his, you know, answering the questions that are of importance to many Hoosier fans. Play that now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And now, we knowing who your quarterback is, which they've known, well, we've all known since it was announced Josh Hoover was coming to Indiana. That helps in a lot of ways. You don't have to worry about I know that there's it's always great to have competition, but at the same time, it's great that you can focus on just being better, not focus on being better and competing, which I know one leads to the other, iron sharpens iron, all that. But when you're coming into a situation like Josh was with having to learn the entire offense and all that, it's great that you can focus on that and those types of things instead of having to also compete. But I'm not opposed to competition at the same time.
Well, yeah, and I think Coach Cignetti had done his due diligence when they brought in Hoover, and he knew that he was going to be available. And had he not fit what Sig wanted as a quarterback, which he's done pretty well at when in terms of evaluating, they wouldn't have brought him in. So he had to meet a lot of the boxes that Sig wants checked before he brings a guy in and says, we're going to go with this guy because he gives us A, B, C, and D, as opposed to somebody that's already in the program that's been here for a couple of years, a la Mendoza. And he wouldn't bring somebody in that he knew was going to fall flat on his face. So I think he's very high on Hoover. I think he's guarded. But I do think you can tell over the last 3 weeks, his tone when he talks about Hoover has really turned to being one of controlled enthusiasm, I guess I would say, because you can kind of hint that he's really excited what he brings to the offense. So
here's something for you that just crossed my mind. Two of the most impactful players for Indiana, and I'm not going to say the two most impactful players, one of them is, but definitely two of the most impactful players on offense for Indiana this year, Tom Allen recruits in Charlie Becker and Josh Hoover.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Hoover originally committed to Tom Allen and that Indiana team. And, of course, Tom Allen brought Charlie Becker in. Just a little bit of irony there.
No question. And, I think we could all agree that, Tom was a good recruiter. He could, especially defensively, the kids that would fit his system. There was just a consistency problem when it came to whether it be offense, whether it be defense, who's calling this, who's calling that. And then he had a kind of a carousel with offensive coordinators. I don't necessarily thought he made right decisions at that spot, but Kellen DeBoer was one of them he made was right. Now, unfortunately, he only lasted for a year, but then the decisions after that, I'm not sure they were the right ones, but there was talent there. It was a matter. Sure
they were not.
Yeah. Well, there was talent there for them to be better than what they were providing on the field in terms of wins and losses. They had a better talent than they had usually had. And it's, as we said, you just said, there's been guys over the years, the last 3 years, that Sigs relied on in positions of importance that have been Tom Allen guys. So that's the one thing with Sig. He never.
Jason points out Carter Smith, also a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Group and Bones Jones and everything else.
Well, he plays defense, but I was talking about offensively. But yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
But that's another player. So. But there's no way you're not going to have any of those guys.
Oh, right, right.
My God, we're talking 100 guys at one point. So,
Sig's always acknowledged that. That's the nice thing about Sig. Most guys come in and say, hey, the cupboard's bare. The last group didn't recruit well, blah, blah, blah. Sig has never said that. He's always been one that once he inherited them, they're my players. And, I've heard him say that they did pretty good on some of the kids that they recruited. So, that's unheard of in some respects to college coaches when they take over. They blame.
We need to get week one pulled up. I need to get the week one pulled up of some of the games and look at and talk, because there will be some. Well, I'll tell you right off the bat, we've got Ohio State and Texas that will be meeting in week one this year down in Austin. Last year, the Buckeyes beat the Longhorns 14-7 up over in Columbus. And this is a huge game. And, kudos to both of those teams for playing that game, I've got to say. Because I personally wouldn't be playing that game or wanting to play that game if I was a coach. I'll be straight up honest with you. Looking at it from a coaching standpoint, nobody wants to be in that game because your team is, they're not even close to the team they're going to be in a month, which is kind of where you get to, at least you get those first three games, you kind of really ease into it. Two games, I could live with two games. And as a matter of fact, I'll go off onto a tangent. Here's where I think the scheduling is going to go for the Big Ten. I think that you're going to have these two puff games, cupcake games, whatever you want to call them. I call them preseason game all the time, a lot by mistake. Pre-conference is what I mean. But I think it's going to go to those pre-conference games, a P4 game, and then your conference schedule. That's just where it's going to have to go to equalize things. I wonder if the SEC and Big Ten will do some kind of a crossover thing, not in all in, but of some sort, because there's so much chatter, yada, yada. But we'll see about that. But definitely I feel pretty confident that it's the Big Ten. Well, first of all, they have to match what the SEC is doing because they've been beating their chest for the last several years about having a 9-game conference schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now the SEC has not only matched that, but they've beaten it because they also require their teams to play a Power Four conference team outside of the SEC. So the Big Ten is, they kind of got to get around to that. And I personally see that's where it's going to go.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to pull some of that up for us here on the spot, trying to manipulate the system here.
And let me tell you, I figured you were, and I was stretching my ass off.
I know you were, but this may not look good. Nah, it doesn't look good because it's too small, but there's so many games that first week that it's kind of impossible to bring them all up. But you're correct. There are some games, like you said, that are okay. That's the true. Let's get our boys ready to play by playing school XYZ. And then there are some, like you pointed out, that it's Ohio State versus Texas. It's a very big time game. We already talked about some of the games, starting off with conference games, Virginia and North Carolina State. So there's going to be some games intermixed through here. But the beauty of week one, it
Miami
starts on
goes to Stanford.
Yeah,
that's a tough game. You're going from Miami to the West Coast.
Yeah,
I'd consider that for a week one game. Yeah, that's a tough one. I'll give them that, and that's going to add to their schedule, and they need it to because they play in the awful ACC.
Well, like I said, that week one, Thursday through Monday, there are games that stretch. So Washington State and Washington, that's their rivalry game. Wisconsin versus Notre Dame on Sunday. That is going to be a big game because we'll get to see where Wisconsin is. Well, we'll get to see where Wisconsin is because the beauty of that is that it's at Lambeau Field in Green Bay, but I do believe it's a Notre Dame designated home game. So I don't know why that all occurred, but Notre Dame currently is a 20.5-point favorite in that game. Louisville versus Ole Miss.
Now that's probably the best game on the schedule.
Yeah, that is on Sunday evening at 7:30. Currently, Ole Miss is currently a 6.5-point favorite. So, you know, there's going to be games. Monday night's game is SMU at Florida State.
That's a hell of a game.
Yeah, the Louisville Ole Miss game, and then Mondays is not bad. You got SMU, who's a top 20 team at Florida State. And SMU is just a 2.5-point favorite over Florida State. And it's a win time for Florida State in that group because they've done nothing since they've been there, that group that took over. So a lot of great games intermixed throughout the day, as we see. But Clemson versus LSU, I don't know how that will turn out. But again, you know,
I'll tell you, man, it's rough in the early season for LSU schedule wise. Mm-hmm. Then Clemson, and I think they play at Ole Miss early.
Mm-hmm. Third week
is third week.
That game is
the third week, and they're already in a conference game. Plus, they would have played the team you just mentioned.
Yeah. Oh, Clemson.
Clemson.
Holy smokes,
that's a tough start to the schedule there, but they'll have their cream puffs in. They just mix them in.
Yeah.
And Indiana plays them three in a row and gets them out of the way.
Well, right. And again, we can sit here and everybody can, well, that's soft.
You know why that is? It's been that way forever because Indiana would always try to get that 3-0 start and then hope that they would get a weak Big Ten game. And get a 4-0 start, maybe a 5-0 start if they're lucky scheduling wise. And boy, and then they would go, of course, 1-6 to end the season or whatever. But yeah. That was always the scheduling hope. And it's kind of just carried over to today. But like I said earlier, that'll be changing in regards to, I think that they'll have the first two games will be cream puffs, and then that third game is going to be against a P4 team. Now, and I don't see them mixing it up once they get into conference play. I think Kurt Cignetti would rather stay in conference play. So I think the third game will be the game Indiana eventually schedules. And was there ever a reason given for the cancellation of the Notre Dame-Indiana game?
I don't think there's been a formal reason, because there's a lot of speculation.
I'm not talking about by Indiana. I'm talking about by anybody, by Notre Dame, by anyone.
I don't think so. I don't think there's been anything said to why. I just said they just came to a mutual agreement not to play, and that enabled that Notre Dame to schedule USC back on their schedule because it's a rivalry that they've established.
I'm going to guess that this was more Notre Dame wanting to cancel this, because when they scheduled it, Indiana was not the program it is today. Number one. So that was not an expectation. They thought they were getting one of the bottom feeders of the Big Ten, as they usually feed on.
But that's a reasonable assumption. I mean, from that standpoint. But there's some other good ones. Baylor, Auburn, Boston College, Cincinnati. I mean, so there's going to be some good ball games, but there are a ton of games like Indiana has where they're playing like a North Texas G6 team. So not everybody's got this somehow beautiful schedule that's so challenging week for, the season that, to say this is weak and that's strong, because they all got them. I mean, let's be reasonable here. So anyway.
Yeah. Don't forget to, speaking of week 1, week 0 is probably an opportunity. So go to the ESPN site and to the fantasy tab, and then get your ISB picks. And coach, do you have all the info for that? I don't have it handy.
Don't have it handy, but I can grab it here as we go to break. See if I can grab it real quick. Perfect.
We'll get that. Make sure you get your picks in. Don't fall under the, start on week 1. Perfect. Brian says that they start on week 1, which is great. So gives us a little time. Perfect. Hey, I'll tell you what it gives us time for, though. We've got to take a break. Dustin DePeric is going to join us next. Back with more right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this beautiful Tuesday. Chamber of Commerce weather out there. Low humidity, beautiful blue sunshiny skies. And speaking of sunshine, Dustin DePeric from the Indy Star. What a segue, baby.
There you go. How you doing, fellas?
Got him live. Great, you don't have to worry about that connection that I couldn't get through yesterday.
How's everything going with you?
Good. Productive, I guess. Busy, rare, late August day yesterday. So I was out on the road. One case, didn't do a good job of, event prepping. I went up to the event that Tyrese Halliburton helped put together with Keith Lee and Gary. And the softball game at night. So I drove up to Gary in the morning and then had the softball game at night.
This is two different things. I was,
yes, two different things. The same thing. So Halliburton was very, he was active, but he didn't go to Gary. And so I didn't have anything to write about. But he just donated $15,000, I think, matching the donation from Keith Lee. And even though I didn't write about it, they did a great job up there. Obviously the people.
Wouldn't that be nice, though?
What's that?
Wouldn't that be nice? I don't want to drive up to Gary. Here, let me just write this $15,000.
You could just write that kind of check. Yeah, if you could just write that kind of check, it's nice. But it's still a significant thing, obviously, for him to get involved in it. It's certainly a story that hasn't been talked enough about. And I don't even know the full contours of it. What exactly the
Maybe might enlighten the audience was what we're exactly talking about.
Well, all my kind of knowledge and understanding is, I guess 2 weeks ago there was really bad storms up in Gary. 2 weeks ago, there was, really bad storms throughout Indiana, and Gary got hit particularly hard, and some people have been without power for 2 weeks, basically. And so it's just been a struggle to get people back online. Obviously, if you've been around Gary, they've been through some stuff to start with, and it makes it even more difficult, certainly when people without power, certainly people have lost food they've been refrigerating and freezing. I mean, and struggle.
all kinds of, like, you can imagine just when you're talking about 2 weeks without power, the sort of things that go in jeopardy in that case. It becomes a major food issue, becomes an issue with people keeping their medication. It hasn't been as hot as it sometimes is in late August, so you're not necessarily dealing with as much problems when you're talking about air conditioning. That's been capable of people for surviving, but you really talk about food preservation and some of those things. And just, you know, being, you know, there's various problems you can run into when you don't have power. You might not have, you know, your water running right, all this kind of stuff. And so they put together a really big event yesterday. It was great turnout, even though I saw Keith Lee for like a minute and Halliburton wasn't there, you know, didn't make it up because he had the softball game. There were thousands of people with this thing. You know, thousands of people were lined up. They had free food trucks, you know, for people. They had all kinds of supplies. Ace Hardware was passing out rakes and cleaning supplies and everything like that. This was at Roosevelt Park up in Gary. And they, you know, they got a great turnout. I mean, they did. I mean, it was really, I think, for what everyone say about making an appearance doesn't really, you know, like the point is getting stuff to people who needed it, and those people needed it. And, you know, and it was, I think it was also just good for them to have community. They had a DJ out and, you know, like, his like dance party, the whole bit. I mean, you could tell just it meant a lot to people just to get together. So that was a really cool thing that Halliburton was a part of yesterday. So that was thing one. And I came back for the softball game. And that they, you know, great turnout there too. And pretty much packed, Victory Field. It sold out. I mean, I don't know that they sold every seat, and there wasn't as many people as you'll usually see, you know, on the lawn that you might see for an Indians game. But it was it was a lot of people out there. Put on a pretty good show, given that these guys don't play baseball, you know, and you know, some of them are really good, some of them aren't. But some of guys were better than I thought. Halliburton was better than I thought. I think Halliburton was better than he thought, actually. He said he hadn't picked up a bat in 5 years, and he went 4 for 5. First time he was up, he had a pop up back to the catcher, didn't look so great, but, you know, like, stuck with it, you know, competed in the box, as you say, you know, like, figured out how to square it up a little bit, and he was finding the holes in the infield and stuff. And some other guys, Obi Toppin hit 2 bombs. Obi crushed him. I think he called a shot once, and then he had another 3 hits and 5 RBIs. I think Obi had Michelle Onyaya, the developmental player. The Fever players mostly were not taking part, as Halliburton pointed out. You know, they're midseason; they're not going to play. But Michelle Onyaya, who's like their developmental player, came out and hit a huge home run in the first inning. Team Halliburton held behind 4-0. Halliburton gave up home runs to Daniel Jones and Caden Curry. I mean, I gave up home runs. He's throwing slow pitch softball. Like, you know, it's not like he's putting stuff on it, you know, or anything like that, or missing locations or whatever. But they were down 4-0 and they went and scored, I think, 20 of the next 21 runs or something like that.
Wow.
To go ahead and to take a commanding lead. But Onyaya hit a bomb to right. And that kind of, I think they put him up 6-3 and they were, or 6-4, and they were up the rest of the way.
I'm sure they shortened the field, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, no one's playing in a 300-foot softball.
Did they put a different fence in the outfield?
Yeah, they put it was like a, not a traffic barrier. I'm trying to think of, like, it was like the fencing that you have, like, if you've got like a parade or something, like the stuff that you put alongside the street. It was like that, you know, like with those kind of metal rails, you know, kind of with the rails in between. So they just kind of put that up about, you know, halfway into the outfield. You know, I mean, like, you're not, like, not a lot of people are hitting a softball 300 feet, you know, like, it's not the same as hitting a baseball 300 feet, you know, like, it doesn't fly the same way. It's huge. You know, that's the reason for that. But yeah, there was some pretty impressive launches. Obi crushed a couple. I think Riley Leonard hit a big one. Caden Curry hit a big one. I knew Caden Curry was going to hit one. He was a stud at Center Grove as a high school baseball player. So
this was not just – was he on the other team?
It was Pacers, Colts, like one or two Fever players. Indy Ignite, the volleyball team, came down. Emma Halter's a nice player. You know, she was – you know.
Who did they play?
What's up?
Who did they play?
They mixed them up. So it was like, basically they took Pacers teams, Colts, you know, basically. So like there were some Pacers guys on each team. There were some Colts guys on each team. You know, so, and they sprinkled a couple of Ignite players in there. And Simone Biles was in the building, by the way. Wow. She didn't play, but she came with her husband, Jonathan Owens, the Colts safety. So I don't know why she didn't play. She probably would have crushed everybody. I mean, I imagine yeah. she makes, you know, I put nothing past her at all.
One of the best athletes
we've seen. But yeah, no, I'm trying to think of what else, but yeah, it's mostly Pacers and Colts, but they were split up. So I think as far as Pacers were concerned, Halliburton, Nembhard, McConnell, Toppin were on one team, Jay Huff, Neesmith, Braden Smith, and who am I forgetting? If I want to say that, Aaron Neesmith were on another team. Jay Huff homered. Tony East said he couldn't do it. He did. So, you know, I want to point that out. It's a rough call on Tony East's part. So Jay launched one. But that was the best on the Blue side, basically. After the first inning, you know, Blues, you know, the Team Jones offense really fell apart. So, but Jay Huff was kind of all they had left after that.
With all that's happened to Indiana residents, it is good to see them getting out, being a part of all these different things. And it's just good to see these guys get out and do stuff, period. Fun sure. stuff like this, you know, engaging with the community. We had the floods there in northeastern Indianapolis area, just northeast of Indianapolis. So up through that area, it's just been quiet.
Yeah.
Serious stuff, but kind of quiet.
Very
it's
serious
weird. Stuff.
For sure. Yeah, no, I mean, it was obviously just a weird summer as far as weather concerned. I mean, like the Indy thing is just a strange deal because it wasn't, you know, like you have it. It wasn't like a situation like the rain itself was that bad. It was just like coming from upriver. And, you know, like you didn't necessarily have this really nasty storm that was, you know, driving it crazy. There was a couple, you know, pretty healthy ones. But I mean, you didn't have something like days of rain or you know, really bad wind or anything like that. That was like,
or days of thunder.
Yeah, exactly. It was just, but it was just, especially areas north of here really got hit really, really hard. And that led to, you know, some downriver, you know, cresting there. And so it's been a strange summer, and it was good, obviously, to see everybody out. Good event, I think, to bring back. I mean, I think, you know, the softball game got carried the rep, not the rep isn't the word, but it was symbolically not the greatest thing because it was connected to the Paul George trade. You know, Paul George was kind of the driving force behind it when he was there. And, you know, it was 2017. There was all kind of trade rumors going around, and he told everybody at the softball game that he was going to stay with the Pacers. And then the next day his agent, ran a trade demand up to, you know, the front office, and Kevin Pritchard called that a gut punch. And it was shortly after that the Oladipo Sabonis trade happens, where Paul George goes to Oklahoma City. And you know, they played the softball game the next year and didn't bring it back. I mean, one, cause George was gone, and two, it just kind of seemed connected to that, split, obviously, with what, you know, at the time was a franchise player. And, you know, Halliburton bringing it back is symbolically interesting, obviously, because that starts the dominoes that brings Halliburton to Indiana, because I mean, they get Sabonis and then they trade Sabonis, to Sacramento to get Halliburton. So, thought that was interesting, but, you know, it's a cool event to have. Obviously, it brings Pacers and Colts together, and just making, you know, just, I think Halliburton in particular, I say this all the time, that he kind of treats this like it's high school. Like, I mean, like when you're kind of a varsity star in high school, like you go to the other games. Like it's notable that, you know, your varsity basketball stars go to the football games and the football guys go to the basketball games, and, you know, everybody's wearing their Letterman jackets and stuff. And, you know, Halliburton makes a point to go to Colts games and Fever games. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if he goes to Ignite games, but he goes to Noblesville Boom games, like, you know, cause they're the JVs in essence. And, you know, prior to the Boom getting in their arena up in Noblesville, I mean, a lot of the stuff was happening on, you know, just between Lucas Oil and Gainbridge on South Street. So it was like, literally kind of felt like that's where Halliburton's high school was. He was going from like one facility to another, and he would go to a Fever game at night after going to the Colts game at 1 o'clock. And, creating that camaraderie among the city's teams, I think, is a thing that he's really interested in. So it was cool to see. And for Halliburton, I think it was cool just to get him back on a field doing something, you know, and he probably was a little bit more into it maybe than you'd want to see from a guy that's coming back off a major injury.
That was in the back of my mind, but
yeah, he did fine. So, you know,
something else I was thinking, we hear all the time trade demand. Someone has issued a trade demand. With collective bargaining, is there an official
No. No, you
channel?
Just tell
you. Okay. I didn't know if it was just a agent just says, hey, he wants traded. Boom, boom. Yada, yada. Or I didn't know with collective bargaining if there was an official avenue that you go down
and
say,
well, there's not like a file. No, I mean, you just call, you know, like your agent or you call your, you know, your front office and say he wants to go. And basically what that, like what you're saying is he's not going to re-sign. You know, when the next time you have a contract,
right. You
know, like you can't, like you're being asked to be traded. They don't have to trade you. There's no, right. You know, like requirement, but you're basically saying like the next time my contract comes up, I'm not going to re-sign with you. And right. You know, that whole thing, it's tricky because, you know, like it's, you know, in almost all cases, the team you're with can pay you more than any team you'd want to go to. Because they don't, you know, most teams don't have the cap room necessary, particularly if you're a max player. You know, they don't necessarily have the cap room necessary. Now, I mean, they can do things to clear it out. They can do a sign and trade, stuff like that. And you generally don't want an unhappy player. You know, you generally don't want a guy who
doesn't. Especially if he's a star.
Right, exactly. Like you don't want your central guy to be there and you know, to be there and not want to play. So, you know, I mean, there's other things that can happen, you know, stuff like that, you know, guys can sort of shut down or, you know, other things that you can do, you know, and it gets ugly basically. And you know, in most cases, like, okay, well, when somebody of that caliber wants to be moved anyway, you know, sometimes that's your best opportunity to get real value, you know, like you can, you know, obviously in the Paul George trades have built multiple franchises. You know, I mean, both the Thunder and Pacers. I mean, no joke. The Thunder and Pacers were in the finals last year because they traded Paul George, you know, and that That's those th- those guys were key. I mean, you know, like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was part of the Paul George trade with the Clippers, you know, so that's their MVP. And obviously Tyrese Halliburton, you know, was the Pacers MVP. And so those two guys, the 2025 finals was built on Paul George trades. And it goes that way in other ways. You could point to other guys that were moved. And, you know, if you don't make that move, you don't get the guy that ends up being the guy who wins your championship. So it you know, when your superstar wants to leave, it's probably in your best interest to make it happen. Because you know, you want to get him out and you can turn that into something valuable. I mean, now somebody might
That's
be
why I got to keep coach happy all the time.
Exactly.
Ask for a trade.
meet all of his contractual demands, whatever Griff wants. Make sure
instead of one instead of one 12 pack of Diet Coke, it's up to two.
Get the man a full case, for God's sake.
What is this, Moneyball?
Yeah,
you gotta have the free drinks in the locker room.
You have to stock the. You have to stock.
Yeah, that's
the,
right.
Yeah,
you gotta stock my Coke machine.
Stock the vending machine.
Yeah, right. My guys are paying $1.50.
Yeah. I just watched that the other day. That was a great movie, man.
Great movie. It's a great book. It's a fantastic book. I never thought they were gonna pull a movie off with that. But it's a great book.
They sure did, Coach.
Well, I don't know if this is, you brought this up and I can't remember, but the biggest thing is the new deal with the zone for the Pacers that has, I guess you would say, ruffled some feathers per se. With all that, I know that, you know, Jeremiah Johnson, that's a guy that I know, JJ. He was a former quarterback in my quarterback room when I was coaching. I didn't know if you knew that, but. Yeah,
I didn't know that. That's great.
Then he became Charlie Cardinal at Ball State. Then he became Charlie Cardinal at Ball State in his latter days there. But anyway, love JJ. But that group with Chris Denari and all them are going to be the ones that are going to be the full-time broadcasters on that. Talk about how that came. Do you know how that came about? What was the reasoning behind it all? Because I know it's another subscription service. It's another out-of-pocket expense that the fans really are not too hip on.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, it goes back a ways. And so this is, the whole story is really a story about how basically Americans are consuming, you know, television, I guess, in general now. And so all of this started way back, because remember, it used to be Fox Sports, like every regional channel used to be Fox Sports, whatever, it was Fox Sports Indiana. Well, the chain starts moving all the way back in 2019 when Disney bought 21st Century Fox. and basically the antitrust, you know, kind of ruling on that was that, you know, that Disney had to sell something basically because they owned ESPN. You know, Disney owned ESPN at the time, and basically that it was kind of monopolistic for them to also own the regional sports networks and Fox. So Disney had to sell those. And so what happened was those were bought by Sinclair Broadcasting through kind of a subsidiary called Diamond Sports Group. And it just never worked out for them. Now, some of that was just being badly managed in the first place. But this is about the time when you really start to see the cord cutting, you know, basically everybody getting rid of cable and, you know, kind of looking on streaming services and whatnot. And there's been kind of this slow decline as far as that's concerned. Well, Diamond Sports Group, which is basically they were kind of the front for when it was called Bally Sports Network. Okay. They declared Chapter 11 bankruptcy in 2023. And so when they did that, they had to kind of create this, you know, when you declare Chapter 11 in bankruptcy, you got to have a plan for how you're going to pay all your creditors off. But there was kind of a separate debtless group called Main Street Sports Group that kind of formed out of that to kind of maintain the regional sports networks that were part of that. And that was called Mainstream Sports. And Mainstream found out really quick that they weren't going to be able to make it. And, you know, that they were just immediately not making their rights payments. So they kind of wound down at the end of the season. You had like kind of one year is when it was FanDuel. And they basically, like, the NBA had to give money to the team so that they would be whole, more or less. Mm-hmm. They just weren't getting the rights payments. So basically, you know, and this is 13 teams were in this situation, 13 NBA teams, bunch of baseball teams, bunch of hockey teams as well.
Really?
They're part of this. So a lot of these have had, like, a lot of teams have had to kind of go looking for another regional partner. And the NBA teams were told, hey, okay, we're going to try to do kind of an aggregated solution was what they call it. They were kind of run some kind of regional sports network hub out of the league. And we'd like to do that next year, maybe the year after that. We want to see where this goes. So you still got to get a partner for this year, but make sure you have an opt out. Make sure you have the opportunity to get out of that if we put this thing together. So the Pacers had to go find something. And, you know, you haven't necessarily had another kind of obvious option to be what Fox Sports Indiana was, to be what Bally was, to be what, to be what FanDuel was. And so, you know, they had all these options. Now, some teams have managed to find a local over the air partner. And so we asked Mel Raines, okay, why didn't you guys do this? And so they settled on DAZN because they believe that this is kind of a long-term option, that they can work with this company long-term. They also kind of feel like DAZN is going to get involved with whatever the NBA does. If the NBA is going to have a full, you know, streaming situation for regional broadcasts, that DAZN is probably going to be involved in that because they're pretty well practiced in it. I mean, they're a really big deal overseas in particular. I mean, basically, I mean, they have full rights to some soccer leagues, you know, like La Liga in Spain and CBA in Italy. And they do a lot of work overseas. They do a lot of work with taking U.S. stuff and running it overseas. So they really feel like they have a good partner. And, you know, but people are obviously mad because, you know, if you're a, you know, if you're a cable subscriber or if you get, you know, I get DirecTV streaming and, you know, basically the FanDuel was part of that. And so, you know, that's something I got to pay for. Now I get it. I'll get it expensed. You know, I'm going to run my expense check, you know, on that and make sure that's paid for. But all the same, you know, like it's something else I got to buy and it's something else other people that have a full network have to buy. You know, one of the guys to the Pacers, great credit. They did a kind of an embargoed briefing, you know, with us, with beat writers and stuff, and to kind of explain how this came about. And, you know, let us ask all these questions, everything like that. They just said, okay, like, just you guys can report this as soon as it's out tomorrow. This is embargoed, but everything's on the record. You could ask whatever you want, and it's usable. You just can't use it until we make the announcement. And so Joey Graziano is their executive vice president. He said, you know, in charge of commercial. And he said, you know, we found out that it used to be in 2010, 88% of households were watching, you know, in the market were watching TV through cable or something like it, paid TV, you know, cable or satellite or whatever. Mm-hmm. That number's down to 30%. And it's basically like, okay, like you have to have the streaming option and to connect with these people. And they made the streaming option much cheaper than it was under FanDuel. There was a streaming option for FanDuel and it was up to $190. I mean, this is $120 a year and there's an early bird price you can sign up for before October 15th and you sign, it's $60. So basically it's a third of what you were paying for streaming if you streamed, you know, FanDuel. But it's an additional $60 that you're paying that you weren't paying if you were getting it on cable. And so it's right. just some fans, it's a lot better. For other fans, it's a lot worse. And so that's kind of the situation they were in. And they feel like this is a more stable partnership. Another thing we asked Mel Rain is there have been other teams that have managed to find a local partner, but they've found it, what they found is they have done it through stations that are on cable somewhere that are basic cable or on basic television that are unaffiliated with, you know, your kind of big four with your CBS, your NBC, right. Fox, you know, basically that they're going to try to, they are going to get, you know, 15 games broadcast on one of the local networks on, you know, whether it's THR or Wish or somebody like that. But you know, like Melstein was like, well, you can't get them to preempt network programming 71 times because that's how many games are going to be on. Yeah. You know, 11 on national.
I think the way it read is that 22 regular season games and 4 preseason games will be available for free.
In front, on, I don't. You have to get on DAZN. Yeah. You have to get the app, right. but that'll right. be ahead of the paywall. Like you won't have
right.
to
for right. 15. Those 15. Yeah, 15 will be over local air broadcast, and then 11 yeah. games are actually nationally televised through NBA partnerships. So
right.
again, it's not the entire season, but for instance, yeah. for somebody like me up here in the Fort Wayne area that doesn't get any local market broadcast, yeah. you know, it had to be on, like you said, FanDuel or Bally Sports. And sometimes, you know, YouTube TV doesn't carry that.
Right.
So now,
right.
mm-hmm. yeah. So now if somebody like myself wants these extra games, you have that option, even right. though it's going to be $60.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is on that, right. in that respect. So
right.
I thought it makes sense, but I think the biggest sticking point, I think was the $60 for those that
yeah.
had to come out of pocket again for something
right.
like this. And right. I think that's kind of where it ruffled yeah. some of the fans.
No, but. It 100% is. And it just speaks to just it, this. It's, everybody's viewing, you know, habits now are fragmented. I mean, basically, like, again, you, like, you know, for it goes back to the idea, like, just so much of our shared experience is fragmented now. You know, everybody used to have cable and everybody used to watch the same TV and same games that were on national broadcast. But it's now like everybody has your own path of doing it. And so if you were, I mean, I think the Pacers with that is like, okay, like if we try to make somebody else the next, you know, Diamond Sports Group or Main Street Sports, we're just going to run into the same problem again. You know, basically that they're going to go under the same way because they're paying these rights fees and there's not as many subscribers and they're not able to charge as much for advertising as they used to. So they're not making the money back at the end of the day. This is the reason why they. Okay. Sorry about that. but there's a reason why they're not making the money back. And so like it's apparently a broken model. Basically just this used to be something that people could trust was going to be there as far as how these regional sports networks work, and they don't anymore. And so, you know, there's, you know, I think there's, again, some value, some teams are gonna be able to put this on sort of dead channels for this year, and we'll see what the NBA does a year from now. But I mean, Mel Rain just said there's not an option in the Indianapolis market for this. Like, there's not a channel we could just take that we could just, you know, take over and put games. So, you know, like some places could do that. We can't. We felt like we had a partner for the long term, somebody we could trust for this, somebody that we would think would do well as far as just having the platform that has experience doing it. And we were able to do it for as cheap as we could. Yeah. I mean, I put out just a question of like, what do you guys think about this on Twitter? And basically everybody that's been streaming was like, this is great. This is tremendous. And everybody that's had cable is like, this is terrible. I feel betrayed. And so yeah, that's
well, you're always not going to make somebody happy. So, Dustin DePirik from the Indy Star, make sure you're giving him a follow, keeping up with all his coverage at the Star of the Pacers. Be a subscriber. Appreciate you, my friend, as always.
Appreciate you. Thanks, you guys.
Absolutely. More coming up right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this absolutely beautiful Tuesday. Coach Griff along with side me, Jim Coyle here. And Coach's got us some breaking news from the Big Ten via On3.
Yeah, this is just a quick summary. The Big Ten is going to vote to not allow NFL rostered players or signed a contract with the pro league to return back to college to play. So they will be the only conference that as of right now will enact that type of rule. So any player that would come out of the NFL will be prohibited from playing in the Big Ten. Supposedly the ACC and SEC are considering similar rules. It would be nice, but they had their chance yesterday to do that, and they kind of just paid lip service to it.
Well, it's more than just that have signed a contract. This is prohibiting players who have declared for the NFL draft, appeared on an NFL roster, or signed a contract with a pro league from returning. So this covers all those bases. The only one I don't see there is having signed an agent. That might be because of the NIL stuff. But if you declare, this goes back to the old days here. If you declare for the NFL draft, you're gone. Your eligibility is cut that day. Not sure that I like that one per se. I mean, if you don't get drafted, for instance, I would have no problem with the player coming back. But that's a discussion for tomorrow, because we won't get to discuss it today as much as we wish we would have.
Just breaking, though. That was just coming out.
Yeah. Great catch. But with that news just coming out. So, but we'll talk more about that tomorrow when we have more time to do so. And looking forward to that. But yeah, that's, you know, the Big Ten can make those rules. The conference, that's what took care of the Brendan Sorsby situation. It was the Big 12 conference. So they stepped up, and so we got that. But looking forward to tomorrow, of course, as always. It's the middle of the week. That means it's really all downhill from there. So
absolutely,
make sure you come back and join us. Go to the ESPN, get your team set up for the picks, which opens in on week one. Fun day today, man. Great discussions as always with the great Mike DeCourcy from Fox and Big Ten. And as we just finished up with our good friend Dustin DePirik from the Indy Star, anything standing out for you?
No, I thought it was a great discussion. Mike always has the greatest insights, as you know, and it's always fun to hear him kind of give his opinion on situations that have occurred in sport. So he's always a great guest to have on here.
Quickly, Brian says, well, we don't really have enough time. Wyatt and Daly, those two players declared for the draft, so they would be out by rule. No, this would probably have to be a grandfathered type of deal. We'll talk more about it tomorrow. Yeah. Appreciate everybody for joining us today. Big thanks to Coach, as always, for keeping us going in the right direction. We're back tomorrow to do it again. Until then, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.